This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Live on tape from the Ed Sullivan Theater in New York City, it's Stephen Colbert!
Have a great show. Hey! You know what? I got a pillow for you right over there. What's up, squad? Beautiful. Hello. Hello,
my friend.
Good to see you.
Great to be seen.
Everybody, thank you so much. Welcome, welcome one and all to The Late Show. I'm your host, Stephen Colbert. Listen to that energy, listen to that warmth. Wind chills today are near zero in New York. And I want to thank my audience right here who braved this cold, came out.
It's cold out there.
Did it, dug down, found that extra gear.
Get into it.
To be here tonight. Came out and came into the Ed Sullivan Theater where somehow it's even colder. Here's what I like about this weather. This is sincerely comforting in a way because it is January 11th. It's supposed to be really cold. That makes sense to me. And that's the only thing that does right now. Look at COVID. Remember, we just needed to take it seriously for what? 3 to 6 weeks, something like that. Then it'll be over. That's going on 2 years ago. Then we thought it was over after the giant peak last winter, plus we had the vaccine, but then Delta came around at the end of the summer into the fall, and that was terrible. And then we all thought, oh, we'd be good by the holidays, and then Omicron came a knocking, and now I don't know what's going on, because the United States reported 1.5 million new infections yesterday. That is terrible, but kind of sweet that we all gave each other the same thing for Christmas. Now, admittedly, 1.5 million is a staggering number. But everybody's saying if you're vaccinated, Omicron is very mild. Well, okay, but if that's the case, then why do we have a record-breaking 145,000 COVID hospitalization with experts predicting a peak in the 300,000 range? Soon there's going to be almost as many people in hospitals as there are TV shows about hospitals. But CDC Director Rochelle Walensky explained that the numbers aren't as bad as they may seem because at some hospitals, up to 40% of the patients who are coming in with COVID-19 are coming in not because they're sick with COVID, but they're coming in with something else and have had the Omicron variant detected. Okay, sure, but even if people aren't coming in for COVID initially, the hospitals are still overflowing. That's like saying, technically, up to 40% of the people who drowned on the Titanic were already wet because they were in the bathtub when the ship went down. So, not so bad. Not so bad. You want to know how sick of this pandemic we all are? Check out this headline that CNN thought we all needed to hear. 5 reasons you should not deliberately catch Omicron to, quote, get it over with. Well, obviously, you shouldn't deliberately catch Omicron. And should I? I mean, all the other late-night hosts are doing it. I'm starting to think they had a secret sleepover, and I wasn't invited. Now, I know, aw. Now, it seems ridiculous to purposefully catch COVID, but according to one doctor, the idea of intentionally trying to catch Omicron is all the rage. Yes, getting Omicron is super popular. I hear it's dating Pete Davidson. But he's got that BDE, that big Delta energy. Now, but that's what I hear. That's what I hear. It's got to be something. It's got to be something. But I got to get a neck tattoo. But as appealing as the notion of intentionally making yourself sick may be, CNN has some pretty good reasons to avoid getting the COVID, including you could get long COVID, you'll stress the healthcare system, and don't mess with Mother Nature, adding, she's been trying to kill us ever since we crawled out of the ocean onto the land. Damn you, Mama Nature! Damn you to hell! Damn straight. You know what? You know what? I was, for years now, I've been against global warming, but now it's just payback time. I'm going back to plastic straws. Now, come here, you damn turtle. Come here! There's no actual turtle here, by the way. Now, there is some help on the horizon. The White House just announced that insurers will have to cover 8 at-home virus tests per month. 8 per month. So, 1 for every new variant. You got to go out and buy the test yourself, which may not be easy, because with skyrocketing demand, rapid antigen tests are hard to find. And even when you do find them, you must first battle the self-checkout machine at CVS. No, no, you're an unexpected item in the bagging area. You are. What? 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 Do I want a bag? Of course I want a bag. What am I supposed to do? Carry this tube of Crest to my car clutched in my butt cheeks? Of course. The big danger is that COVID has mutated into a political issue. And today, things got ugly on Capitol Hill, where Dr. Anthony Fauci was testifying in front of his old nemesis, Kentucky Senator Rand Paul, seen here sporting his signature hairstyle, Fettuccine Al Hedo, during hearing about the federal response to Omicron, Senator Paul accused Dr. Fauci of attacking other scientists who opposed COVID lockdowns, and the good doctor had about enough.
Do you really think it's appropriate to use your $420,000 salary to attack scientists that disagree with you?
Senator, the email you're referring to was an email of Dr. Collins to me. If you look at the email
that you responded to and hurried up and said, I can do it, I can do it. We got something in Wired
magazine.
No.
I think in usual fashion, Senator, you are distorting everything about me.
Get him, Fauci! Come on! Take off the gloves. Take off the gloves and a mask. I have your results, Senator, and I regret to inform you, you've contracted my boot in your ass. Dr. Fauci was just scrubbing in. He went on to tell the committee the dangerous consequences of a sitting senator spreading lies about him.
What happens when he gets out and accuses me of things that are completely untrue is that all of a sudden that kindles the crazies out there. And I have life that threats upon my life, harassment of my family with obscene phone calls because people are lying about me.
That's just terrible. Dr. Fauci should not be getting obscene phone calls from violent crazies. He should be getting them from lonely singles who saw his In Style magazine cover. Hello, doctor. Do those novelty socks go all the way up? But Dr. Fauci used the scientific method to figure out just what Paul was up to.
So I ask myself, why would Senator want to do this? So go to Rand Paul website, and you see Fire Dr. Fauci with a little box that says, contribute here. You can do $5, $10, $20, $100. So you are making a catastrophic epidemic for your political gain.
In response, a pretty damning accusation. In response, Rand Paul sent out an email. Dr. Fauci tried to smear me by saying I'm profiting from the pandemic. Prove him wrong by donating $10, $20, or $100 today. But if there's one thing out there more contagious than COVID, it's stupid. Because Rand Paul was joined in his dumb attacks on Fauci by Kansas senator and man who bought his veneers by the foot, Roger Marshall. Senator Marshall asked Fauci about Fauci's financial disclosure, which is public, because that's how financial disclosures work. And Fauci, let it be known that in no uncertain terms, it's not his fault if the senator doesn't know how to Google. Then at the end, the good doctor let his real feelings be known on a hot mic.
My financial disclosures are public knowledge and have been so. You are getting amazingly wrong information.
So I cannot find them. Our office cannot find them. Where would they be if they're public knowledge? Where?
Senator Marshall, Dr. Fauci has answered you. It is public information, and he's happy to give it to you if you would ask. Senator Moran.
What a moron.
And now that clip lives forever on the internet, the one place where Senator Marshall and his staff will never be able to find it. There is some uplifting news from the world of medicine, because on Friday, in a medical first, a man with a terminal heart disease got a transplant of a genetically modified pig heart. Great news for the patient. Now, not only does he get a new heart, but eating bacon is actually good for it. And the patient is recovering nicely, and his new heart is functioning and already doing most of the work. Well, I'm pleased to say the patient is doing well. The only downside, I'm afraid your father is no longer kosher. The procedure was a massive scientific undertaking, for starters. To suppress the immune system and prevent rejection, doctors made 10 genetic modifications on the pig heart. Amazing, but you gotta be careful when you mess with pig DNA. We all learned that from the movie Jurassic Pork. Big news for our friends across the pond in the UK. They'll soon be celebrating Queen Elizabeth's Platinum Jubilee, and Britain is pulling out all the stops to mark the Queen's 70 years on the British throne with pomp, pudding, and parties. There's even a very popular plan to launch Prince Andrew into the sun. Now, he doesn't sweat. Now, this is a big deal because no British monarch has ever spent 70 years on the throne before. The closest any British royal has come is Queen Victoria, who ruled for 63 years, which explains the new royal commemorative china. Suck it, Vicky. Well, her anniversary is next month. It's been announced that the Queen's Jubilee festivities will culminate with a 4-day-long public holiday starting on June 2nd. In fact, People magazine has already released their commemorative The Queen Will Definitely Live Until June issue. We got a great show for you tonight. My guest is Bradley Cooper. But when we come back, meanwhile.
Enjoying this episode of The Late Show Pod Show? Then head to cohst.app/lateshow or visit the link in the description to fill out our quick 2-minute survey all about getting to know you.
John.
Hey!
There it is. John.
There it is.
John, I am grateful to everybody who comes on this show. I love all my guests equally, but our guest tonight, Bradley Cooper, is an extraordinary artist.
Very.
I think I've said this before. It almost makes me angry how multi-talented he is.
Oh yeah.
Last time he was on here for Star Is Born, exactly,
right.
Which he also
Star
directed.
Is Born, he was here.
Extraordinary. He's on tonight for. A film by Guillermo del Toro, a director I absolutely love. It's Nightmare Alley. And I watched it last night.
Oh,
absolutely brilliant. First 15 minutes, I'm like, I wonder what this is going to be.
What genre is it? What genre?
Noir. Noir.
Yes.
A much abused style, in my opinion.
Uh-huh.
And it's very it's noir and kind of like carnival and stuff like that. I'm like, I wonder what this is going to be. Half an hour in, I'm like, oh my God, this is fantastic.
Yes.
The performances are amazing. You got Cate Blanchett.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You got Bradley Cooper.
Oh yeah.
You got your Willem Dafoe in there. It's extraordinary.
What's the plot? Can you give it away?
I cannot.
Okay.
I can't. I he could.
Yes, right.
But legally, I'm not allowed to. Mm. But I watched the whole film and Of course, I watch every film of everyone who ever comes on this show. And I read every book, and I watch every television show.
Yeah, that's my, yeah, of course.
So it's not like this is special, like that I watch the film. I do that always.
Right, of course.
I just watched this one more.
Yeah. Twice,
yeah. Folks, you know, I spend a lot of my time on the show. If you watch the show, you'd figure this out. Right over there. Standing right over there in the monologue, spelunking through the day's stories to select and source the newsiest marble, chiseling it into a pedestal of humor as wide as two Greek aisles. Then I cast the most topical current events bronze into a finely crafted mold to erect for you the towering Grecian colossus that is my nightly monologue. But sometimes, just sometimes, folks, I jolt awake inside what's left of a rusted Mazda Miata in a white claw and oven cleaner-induced fugue state. Shamble through the junkyard, ransacking the debris for old fishing rods, melted batteries, and a shovel of a derelict backhoe, and then boost an acetylene torch to hastily weld together the bootleg truckosaurus of news that is my segment.
Meanwhile...
It's an antiseptic. Meanwhile, a new study says you can fight midlife crisis and find spiritual meaning with skateboarding. Yes, because nothing puts a pep in a middle-aged step like a shattered clavicle. Meanwhile, folks, sometimes we come across such important ocean-based news that it requires its own underwater subsegment, which we call Marinewhile. Marinewhile. Researchers say that female dolphins have a clitoris much like humans. This is such a groundbreaking report that it can only be covered in my Genitals of the Ocean Life sub-sub-segment, Marinewhile Vaginewhile. Marinewhile Vaginewhile. After dissecting several dolphin specimens, researchers identified an unmistakable clitoris the size of a AA battery and the color of Spam. It answers a lot of questions about dolphin anatomy, but raises quite a few more questions about Spam. I always wondered what was in there. Meanwhile, scientists have found that some people love gazing at themselves in video meetings. Oh, please, people, focus. It's work. You're not supposed to be thinking about yourself all day. I mean, how narcissistic can people B.
Up next, Bradley Cooper.
Rise and shine, football fans. Start your day the right way with Morning Footy, a podcast that covers every aspect of the global game, headlines, match previews, analysis, interviews, culture, fashion, and plenty of banter. Join as we track the thrills and spills of Europe's biggest title races, the business end of the Champions League season, a summer packed with international competitions, MLS, NWSL, and much more. Subscribe to Morning Footy.
Ladies and gentlemen, my guest tonight is an award-winning writer, director, and actor you know from Silver Linings Playbook, American Sniper, and A Star is Born. You can currently see him in Licorice Pizza and Nightmare Alley. Please welcome back to The Late Show, Bradley Cooper. Bradley Cooper, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Now, sir, have you been in front of a
live
audience?
No, can you see how excited I am?
It's different, isn't it?
Couldn't help it.
It's really nice.
Hello. Hello. It's amazing.
It's lovely.
Nice to
see you again. Had a really nice time talking with you about A Star is Born. Of course, I'm a massive fan, as you know. But I want to get to Nightmare Alley and Licorice Pizza. You're a busy man for
How
somebody.
How out of breath are we?
What?
How out of breath are we?
Alarming. How are your holidays? I know you have a young child. You have a daughter.
A daughter who's here.
Oh, she's here
now? She's backstage, yes.
So old enough for Christmas?
Oh, yeah.
Old enough for Christmas, but young enough that it's like everything, right?
Well, you know, we do this thing baby to baby. Do you know that?
I do not know that.
Where you could be Santa's helper and you can find four kids or three kids and you make presents and then help Santa deliver them. I'm going to be out of breath the whole interview. People like come in halfway through, like, what's wrong with this guy?
very few guests need supplemental oxygen to get through. It's like we're mounting K2 right now. That's really lovely. So you guys put together toys to give to other children.
Other children.
That's lovely.
And also, for those of you who have kids, you know, they really push that Ghostbusters laser on every commercial in between cartoons. So she wanted that. So Santa.
Oh, the backpack with the thing where you capture the ghost. So she got that?
She got that, yeah.
Nice.
She's like, where's the laser though? Because it's just like a little plastic thing. But you do capture the ghost, but I have some notes on the laser.
She thought there was
going to
be a
real
laser shooting out. Yeah. Well, okay. Well, I thought you were a big star, Dad.
Yeah, I couldn't deliver.
Thought you could
couldn't
get me. No. You couldn't even get me Paul Rudd.
No. I
as I was saying to John in the last act, I watched Nightmare Alley last night.
Thank you for watching that.
It is, I watch every movie.
Of course you
do. I watch every movie.
I just, yeah.
It's an absolutely brilliant film, and it's this perfectly executed noir, which, as I was saying to John, it's kind of like an abused form these days. But I think it is the greatest modern noir film. I'm just curious. This is the I understand you signed up for this right out of Star Is Born.
Kind of. Actually, I was gonna do another movie. That I've been writing for like 4 years, but then I knew Guillermo was going to make this movie, and I was a huge fan of his from Shape of Water and Pan's Labyrinth and so many movies, and he was going to make this movie, and I knew that Leonardo DiCaprio was going to do it, who's a friend of mine who I admire tremendously, and then he dropped out, and my friend and my agent Dave said, you know, Guillermo wants to meet with you, and I was like, really? And I was and honestly, I mean, maybe this sounds crazy, but just the fact that, like, I was the second in line, like, after Lee, he was going to go to me. And I was like, well, I'll do anything he wants. And then the cast was already assembled. So you already had, like, David Strathairn and Cate Blanchett and Willem Dafoe. And so it was just like, of course I'm going to do it.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about your character, who is Stanton Carlisle.
Right.
He's a something of a drifter.
Yes.
But clearly a fiercely intelligent person.
Yes.
You know, a very quick study, shall we say, facile.
A survivor.
Yes. Now, I'm curious, everybody in the movie, to a certain extent, is carny. You know, a lot of the characters are, and a lot of them are grifters of some kind or another.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, as an actor, in what ways do you relate to that? Or what ways do you, maybe another way to put it is, how do you avoid being that as an actor?
Mm.
Because I understand the nomenclature.
How about as a person?
Well, okay. But sure, as a person, how do you avoid doing
that? Right, being utterly manipulative all the time.
Right, to get what you want by presenting
what
one face.
That's right.
For that you would think people want to see.
Yes, and that in there lies why this role actually was very hard in the end, because you know, the older you get, the older I get, I just want to don't act. Do as much preparation as I can, and we had 6 months to prepare, which was wonderful. And Guillermo and I, we worked on the script with Cate and Rooney and just everything, and really came up with what's the story. So then we got there, and it really felt like we invoked Stanton Carlisle. I mean, the voice alone, we worked on the voice. This guy, Tim Monaco, I've been working with since American Sniper, placed him in Canton, Mississippi. Darren Brown, this incredible mentalist, got to work with him and really honed everything. So this guy kind of existed. And Guillermo and I kind of watched what Stanton was going to do every day.
And for the people who haven't seen it yet, Stanton Carlisle is he starts off as basically a midway mentalist.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he starts out as a sort of grifter and then learns about mentalism from David Strathairn's character. And then you watch him sort of piecemeal all of these things that he's learning, and then you use them and actually thrive off of those skills. But all he does is manipulate. And it definitely did kind of mess me up a little bit. I definitely found like it was dark. It was a dark film.
Do you think you could do that with your own study of human behavior? Because so much of it is trying to perceive in someone else the need that they won't name publicly and then giving them the thing that they wish they could ask for.
Yes. I mean, Cate's character says, you know, what do I want? And he says, what everybody wants to be found out. Mm-hmm. And you hit him where it counts, health, wealth, love. Find out what they're afraid of and sell it back to them, as long as you don't oversell it.
We have a clip here, and do you want to set it up? Is there anything you want to say before we see this next clip? Because it's a very interesting moment in this film.
Well, this clip that we're going to watch was we were terrified of this scene, all of us, Guillermo and myself, really, because it's an important scene, and it's a scene that a lot of the movie is leading towards. And so we actually had a roaming set that we could take with us every day in case we didn't get it, because we were both kind of terrified that it wouldn't happen. Isn't that nuts?
What? So, like, we didn't get it, let's try it again tomorrow?
Yes.
And it would always be ready to go?
Always be ready, because it takes place in the trailer. And we would shoot Tim Blake Nelson, and then we'll have that footage, and just in case. We also came up with another scene that could have come after that. All out of just feel like, is this gonna happen? And on the day, the take that you'll see, it was just one take, first take, it all just happened. And it was kind of a magical moment.
Jim?
It ain't much, but it's a job, right? Of course, it's only temporary. Just until we get a real geek. You know what a geek is? So what do you say? You think you can handle it? Mister. I was born for it.
There's nothing to be said. There's nothing to be said, unfortunately, right now. A strangely satisfying moment, or a strangely,
yes.
It's a strange consummation of a lot of other events, that one 100%. Moment right there.
It really was, yeah.
Especially when you drink the whiskey.
Yeah.
Especially when you take that second shot.
Man.
We have to take a quick break, but when we come back, I will ask Bradley Cooper about his other new movie, Licorice Pizza, and the odd connection he has to the character he plays. Stick around.
I'm Rachel Martin. After hosting Morning Edition for years, I know that the news can wear you down. So we made a new podcast called Wild Card, where a special deck of cards and a whole bunch of fascinating guests help us sort out what makes life meaningful. It's part game show, part existential deep dive, and it is seriously fun. Join me on Wild Card, wherever you get your podcasts. Only from NPR.
You've been very busy. During COVID, doing movies. Did you shoot this during COVID?
Yeah, we shot it and then we stopped. We shot the second half of the movie first, which was kind of insane. And then when we shut down for COVID and for 6 months, right? March, April, May, June, July, August, and came back end of September. And in that time, we got to edit that part because the movie actually has two sections. There's a carnival and then it fast forwards 2 years later. And so it really informed us of what we could then mine in the first half of the movie that would pay off in the second. And it was invaluable. And I was able to lose weight so that, you know, he's very, he's living off the land. He's got nothing in the first. And then all of a sudden he's in Buffalo and he's living in a wonderful hotel and he's eating room service every day. So he's a little more plump. And so that we were able to do that, which I'd never been able to do.
What a luxury to be able to do that, to make that plan.
Yeah. And then the other thing was Paul Thomas Anderson called me, and he's a hero, absolute hero. I was going to give up acting. Punch Drunk Love was released, I think it was like 2007. I went to the Landmark in L.A. and watched the 12:30 p.m., and I thought, well, I can never give up. Because I don't want to be somewhere else, and this movie's out, and I think I didn't try. So he's always been a hero. He asked me to do a small role in his film, and we shot that in between Nightmare Alley.
And that's Licorice Pizza.
That's Licorice Pizza, yes.
And you play a part based on the real life producer, legendary producer, John Peters. Here he is threatening to burn someone with gasoline.
Yeah, it's the gas crisis in the 70s in the Valley, and he. His Ferrari has run out of gas on his way to pick up Barbara Streisand to go to the movies.
Because he was
going out with Barbara Streisand. He was a hairdresser who then became one of an infamous producer in Hollywood and produced A Star Is Born, actually, ironically enough.
So he was he a fun guy to play?
Yeah.
And you must know him.
The truth is, if it wasn't for John Peters, I never would have been able to make A Star Is Born because he deferred his grandfathered fee that he would get. And because we made it on a relative shoestring, that movie, if he didn't defer, I never would have been able to make the movie.
It's not the most flattering portrayal of the character. Have you seen him since you actually played
this? No, I have no idea what he's done. No idea. No.
We have to take another break. When we come back, I will ask Bradley about how he got his new directing gig, Maestro.
Hi, I'm Jordana Abraham.
And I'm Dr. Naomi Bernstein.
And we want to tell you about Calm the F*** Down, a guided meditation series from the Oversharing Podcast. This is something we've been planning for a long time. It's our most requested segment from the podcast. And these meditations are going to be between 5 and 10 minutes. They're going to be super quick because we don't have a lot of time. You're going to be so surprised how 5 to 10 minutes of really thoughtful meditations can transform your whole life. In addition to the first 4 meditations available at launch, we'll be doing 2 new meditations every single month. Plus, for the fans of Oversharing Podcast out there, you'll also get ad-free versions of every episode of the Oversharing Podcast.
So if somebody wants to become a subscriber, how do they join?
It's so easy. You just go to subscribe.betches.com and sign up now for only $4.99 a month. Or you can lock in our discounted rate if you sign up for the whole year. That's subscribe.betches.com. Or if you're in the Apple Podcasts app, you can just hit the subscribe button now and sign up in the app. It's as easy as that.
You know what a big fan I am of Star Is Born, as I said before. And I understand that you're going to start directing your second film.
Yeah.
Okay. And this is based on Leonard Bernstein called Maestro.
Yes.
How did this come about?
You know, it's a weird thing. I've been so lucky, you know, I always thought maybe I could play a rock star musician, and I got to do A Star Is Born. And when I was 8 years old, I asked Santa Claus for a baton because I was obsessed with conducting classical music.
Why does an eight-year-old, did you play a classical instrument?
I mean, I played the upright bass, by the way. I mean, wow.
Did you want to conduct?
Yes, I was obsessed with it. I spent hundreds of hours I'm not kidding. Like I really, you know, you put your 10,000 hours in for something you never do. I did it for conducting. And,
just pretend conducting.
There was something. I think it was probably, you know, remember Bugs Bunny and Tom and Jerry? You know, I think it was that.
Like, I honestly think it was. Exactly.
Yeah, and that was also the upright face. Remember, ain't you my baby? Remember that cat does that in the cartoon? Yeah, anyway. So I was a big Tom and Jerry fan. Steven Spielberg knew that. And he happened to know that I had this obsession with conducting. Like in grad school, I created, you know, you do like a thing. I did an MFA and you create a character and I created a conductor and then wrote a monologue. So it was really something that was always inside me. Mm-hmm. So he said, there's this project called Maestro. I might direct.
He might direct.
He might at that time. And would you read it to maybe play the guy? And I didn't know anything about Leonard Bernstein. I read it and I said, well, you know, I just wrote and directed this movie and that's really all I want to do. Are you really going to direct this? And he said, I'm probably not going to. I said, well, can I show you A Star Is Born? I'm just in the middle of coloring it. And then if you like it, could I research Leonard Bernstein and figure out what the story could be? And so he came to, this was like, I'll never forget this, Stephen. He came and we're sitting there and I'm showing him A Star Is Born and he's all the way on the other side in the front row, like this coloring, a pretty huge screen. And it's the scene where Jackson calls Allie up on the stage. Like the whole thing, you know, it's the biggest scene in the movie, right? And I'm sitting there and right as she like, just as going on the stage, he gets up and I thought, oh, he's going to the bathroom now? And I was like, that's it, it's over. Like if he's going to the bathroom, at this point in the movie, where it's all literally like it starts, there's like a drum beat that starts when she quits her job all the way, and he like gets up, he walks over, and I just am putting my head down, and I put my head down, and next thing you know, I like feel his face here, and he says, because it's loud, because the guitar, he's going, you're directing Maestro. And then he sat back down. And it was amazing.
Yeah. That's an amazing moment.
It was amazing. Yeah.
Well, Bradley, it was wonderful to have you
here.
Thank you so much
for
being here.
This has been The Late Show Poncho with Stephen Colbert. If you're enjoying The Late Show Poncho, leave us a five-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Watch The Late Show with Stephen Colbert weeknights at 11:35, 10:35 Central on CBS and Paramount+. And for more exclusive Late Show content, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and subscribe to The Late Show on YouTube.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the flag.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me? You're going to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown, new season streaming June 2nd, exclusively on Paramount+.